Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The education package that you have before you was passed out of the Education Policy and Finance Committee and is a compilation of budget balancing. It is a package of reforms and mandate reductions that we'll point out as we kind of go through the proposal. But what I'd like to do is just take a moment or two and in for this committee, maybe just refresh what I'm sure every one of you already knows. But the situation that brought us to this point was the November forecast, which was $4.8 billion, negative $4.8 billion, and of course the February forecast, which was even larger than that, roughly $4 billion, and the fact that we could, I think, as a state, not exclude 40% of our basically general fund budget and try to bring some balance to that budget without having the schools and the education system in the state participate. Now, with that caveat, we are trying to do a survey at the present time, and under the current circumstances, school districts are making significant reductions already in their respective districts. So what we've attempted to do in this is to try to mitigate as much as possible the reductions that are being made. The target that we were dealing with in this proposal is $972.5 million. And our fiscal staff, Mr. Nauman, will go through that in a minute or two. That $972 million represented about 7% of our general fund appropriations in K-12 education, E-12 education. When we calculate in the federal dollars that we will have, which is about $519 million, and try to mitigate some of those reductions, we had to work around several problems. And I think as we explain the bill, you'll realize the complexity of the sequencing and everything. The problems of maintaining efforts for education spending, and a number of those maintenance of efforts are federal mandates. The problem of trying to accommodate the federal guidelines that went with the fiscal stabilization money that we had, which are relatively new and which kind of temporarily upset our plans, but we have, with the Senate fiscal staff and with the Department of Education fiscal staff, we're able to define a way to do that. And so we started with a 7% reduction. We added back the federal money. We ended up with a 3.2% roughly a 3.2% reduction, and along with the attempt to try to give greater flexibility to school districts and also add elements of reform to the overall system, I think you'll see that there's a fairly good package of educational initiatives in here. And I think this would be a good time to have our fiscal staff try to explain the complexity and how the, I'll say, manipulation of putting this budget occurs. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment that needs to be adopted. It's an amendment that I think is the A37 amendment.
If we could have the amendment distributed.
It deletes one section. Early childhood. Fiscal stabilization account, which is being dealt with in a bigger bill.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
The A37 amendment does two things. One is that there is a section that, Section 44, which relates to early childhood. Page 160, that subdivision 2A, is an early childhood initiative subdivision that needed to be deleted. Senator Clark has that initiative, and as we were assembling it, this is one piece that needed to come out, or she wants to come out. Section 44 is the section creating the fiscal stabilization fund, which will not necessarily be in the education bill, but I believe will be in a separate piece of legislation relating with the fiscal stabilization money.
Well, just to offer that clarification, Senator Stumpf, I think you were in your division yesterday morning, but in the full committee, members might recall that when I had the bill that provided monies to finance and the auditor for tracking the stabilization money, there was also an amendment added that created the fund. So that's where it's being carried. All right. First of all, I realized that we have not adopted the division report. So Senator Stump moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. So we have the A37 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor, Senator Stump moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Nauman?
Amendment, but later.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, I'm working off of the spreadsheet that's labeled A revised. This is the spreadsheet that travels along with the Senate file 1328 and reflects the division's actions from last night. I'm going to work primarily off the column that's listed different Senate minus February fiscal 2010 through 11, although from time to time I'll make reference to the tails, and in that case I'll be looking at Senate minus February 12-13. Mr. Chairman and members, on line 7 is more of an accounting mechanism. The QComp program, which is available to some school districts but not all school districts because it has a capped allocation within general education, is being rolled out under this the language of the bill. And you'll see that negative $56 million and $140 in the tail reflected as an add back. So although this looks like a cut to general education, and I suppose it is, it's an accounting mechanism to move it outside of general education. On line 9, there is a limitation on the extended time formula, saving about $10,000. This is a governor's initiative. In current law, I'm now on lines 10 and 11, there is a wind production subtraction inside general education. This is school districts that have wind energy, and we have been previously subtracting an equal amount of wind production tax or of general education revenue for the amount of revenue that districts get from the wind production tax. This was something added into the law, I think, 3 years ago. There's been some conversation in the committee that maybe we would like to revisit that. For equity concerns, school districts will be allowed to retain half of the revenue that they get from the wind energy tax without a subtraction, and the permanent school trust fund will be credited with the other half. The Brooklyn Center School District is allowed an increase in their transition revenue. That district's in statutory operating debt, and they made a case for some additional funds. On line 16, members of this committee may recall that the K-12 bill for the K-12 finance bill for each biennium in the last two biennia has included the consolidated levy. That's where the levies values of the equity transition and operating capital programs have been consolidated and imposed as a sort of general education type levy, and that position is retained again in this bill, with the caveat that in fiscal 12 and 13 the levies are allowed to expand by $200 million and $350 million. And members will note that the dollar values in 12 and 13 on the aid spreadsheet are shown reflecting the 90-10 split calculation. And I think it should be noted that there are no shifts contained in this bill, and this is the first potential shifted item that's worthy of mention. On line 20, the main budget balancing mechanism in this bill is after the general education calculations are made, an aid subtraction is taken off equal to $544 and $424 million each year, and the tail is $271 and $190. That saves $968 million. Doing the mechanism in this manner means that there is actually no statutory change to the formula allowance or any of the other formulas, but instead it's an aid reduction after all those calculations are made. The dollars in the language of the bill are distributed per pupil, and these dollars, some portion of these dollars will be replaced with federal funds when we get down to, I think it's line 224 at the very bottom. So if you want to advance, you can see how much federal funds. But we'll get to that because there's a couple items I want to mention when we get to that. On line 36, when the levies are consolidated, there are some districts, as they move back to the average, actually see levy increases. And the total value of those school districts in fiscal 2011 that see increases is $22 million. In Senator Stump's 1328, those districts are held harmless for that fiscal year. So the levies are bought down. The appropriation in fiscal 11 is 19.8, and there is a slight tail, and again, that reflects the 90-10 payment schedule. Senator Olson had a provision that was referred to as the homeschoolers provision in division, which limited some expenditures on non-public pupil aid for homeschool students in exchange for relief of some administrative requirements. That saves about $1.4 million in over the biennium. That concludes the general education program, which shows that it's down about $1 billion. And again, some of that's a mechanical adjustment. On line 45, similar to what was done to the special education program in the 2003 legislative session, where a statutory appropriation cap was established on that program, that mechanism is used to establish a charter school building lease cap. However, different from what was done to special ed in 2003, charter school building lease aid is allowed to expand at about 3%, well, exactly 3% a year. It's currently growing at about 11% a year, so that does generate about $8 million of savings in the biennium. Integration aid, on line 51, the governor's recommendation to cap that program at FY09 levels has been accepted in this division report, saves $8.3 million. On line 59, statewide testing has been reduced to reflect the elimination of the the constructed response hand scoring. It saves about $4 million a year. A governor's initiative on line 60, the Summer of Success. This is a program for students between their 7th and 8th grade years. It was a governor's recommendation. On line 61, again, that's the add back of the alternative compensation, the QCOMP program. So that's the $56 million coming back into the spreadsheet. Line 64, The APIB program is reduced by $3.5 million. On line 67, the collaborative urban educator is reduced by $200,000 a year. On line 69, references an increase to the early childhood literacy programs. That is an increase relative to the base, but it continues a program that was funded in the previous biennium. We're adding the RTI program, which is a program for attempting to deal with which stands for response to intervention. It's an attempt to try to reduce the number of kids that end up identified as special ed. And I mentioned that was funded in the prior biennium. We thought it prudent to include it in this line item, and then there's rider language in the appropriation. Mr. Chair and members, on line 74, a governor's initiative for the Math Science Teacher Center, funded at $1 million a year. I think the governor's number was a little bit higher than that. I think he had 1.5. On line 78, the Minnesota Virtual Education Program is funded at $500,000 a year, and there is no tail on that. And that was a governor's initiative as well. Mr. Chairman and members, the committee made no changes to the special education program. And so I'm now moving down to line 101. This is a reduction to the alternative facilities bonding aid. This was a program that was begun back in the 1998 timeframe that gave certain school districts in the state some property tax relief. And some of that relief is on a temporary basis eliminated. And the reason for that is when the bill was being completed, it was important to hold some school districts harmless for the effect of the consolidation. I mentioned that on an earlier line item, and it was necessary to reduce this property tax relief to ensure property tax relief for other districts. So that was a decision that was made in the division. Nutrition libraries are held without any reductions. Moving on to line 142, the pre-kindergarten education allowances is funded at $14 million and $16 million in the TALES. This is a program that began as a pilot program. It's essentially a parental choice, early childhood financing mechanism. And the appropriation in the prior biennium was $6 million over 2 years, but most of that money was spent in fiscal year 2009. So the committee felt that the base really to continue that program was about $6 million, and then there's a slight there's a $2 million escalation in the program. And Mr. Chairman and members, on line 165, it shows the education aides down $970 million, and the tail is down $1.2 billion. Moving on to the Department of Education, on line 183, there's a 3% reduction to the Department of Education's operating budget, saving $1.3 million. The Purpich School also 3%, saving $426. And finally, concluding the general fund, last line item change is 197, where the Faribault Academies are also see a 3% reduction. So, Mr. Chairman and members, on line 206, the total general fund appropriations in the division report, 972.587, hitting the target. Then I'd move on to the federal funds. I prefaced this previously. Line 224 is the fiscal stabilization money. The committee was given an allocation of $519.6 million. And in a moment, I'll call your attention to the both the bill as well as the data run. There is some unique calculations that have to be made in this manner. Under federal law, when we make reductions to education aides as a result of the fiscal stabilization bill, the first requirement is for education in fiscal 09 to be filled up. Any cuts that were made to 09 have to be replaced. Then sequentially into fiscal 10 and then into fiscal 11. And there were no cuts in 9, so that was not a material factor for this report. But then there were obviously reductions, and you saw those on line 20 to fiscal year 10. And the federal money has to replace that those dollars. Obviously, you will note that the 519 is a smaller number than the 544. So we use the entire allocation to replace the state cut in fiscal 10 to the primary education formulas. However, and this is where the calculations became a little challenging, Mr. Chairman and members, if we had stopped there, the data runs per district would have had a cut of about $30 per pupil in fiscal year 10 and about a per pupil, and then a reduction of $500 or so in fiscal year 11. So there was, the committee felt a fair bit of unevenness to that. So we scoured some of the guidance that was given to the was given to all states for implementing the ERA funds, the state fiscal stabilization funds, and discovered a provision that allows the governor to essentially phase those dollars over the course of 2 years to avoid what is described as a funding cliff. So the bill a funding cliff among districts. So the bill contains language to move some of that 519, 200 million of it, from fiscal year 2010 into 2011, and thereby balancing out the cuts between the two fiscal years. It's important for this committee to note that we do continue to appropriate that federal money in fiscal 10, but it will actually be allocated over 2 years, 319 in fiscal 10 and the 200 million in fiscal 11. I want to pause there and see if there are questions on that point, because it's a little
different than what.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, Mr. Mossman is mouthing to me that I forgot to mention this is reallocated based on the entitlements. Okay, so Mr. Chairman and members, that does conclude the aid spreadsheet of the bill. Given that there was some peculiarities with the how that federal money got phased, it might be worthwhile to take a quick glance, I believe, at the data run that I think has been handed out to you. We labeled this one C revised. And members will note that I'm looking at the big numbers at the top of the columns, the 544 and the 319 and the net 224. You will note the 544 corresponds directly to line 20 of the spreadsheet, where we see the state aid being reduced. The next set of columns over shows 319.6, and that's a portion of the federal funds. So although it's been appropriated, what the data run reflects is the actual mechanism post-governor phasing the money under the language of the bill. So we're only showing 519 in federal funds in fiscal 10. In fiscal 11, and that results in a net 224.3 reduction to districts. Then in fiscal 11, 424 comes off. That ties directly to the spreadsheet. And then you see the actual $200 million that was phased into the second year of the biennium. And what that results in is an even 273 reduction per district.
Who's chairing?
Tell us where in the – we got lost.
Yeah, I apologize.
Was it C or B revised?
We got
– I apologize. We started on A revised.
We're good
yes,
there.
We got that.
I skipped B because those are property taxes. I'll come back to that and move directly to C because we sequence is a little better.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who is
John? So what, do you have C revised?
Mm-hmm.
This is the data run for districts. You'll note that the number comes out of districts in fiscal 10 evenly, $273 per pupil.
Okay.
Then the state, now moving on to the fiscal 11 data run, you'll note the state aid reduction comes out evenly at $515. And then there's the $200 million in federal funds that gets added back, but not quite so evenly. And the reason for that is because we are appropriating essentially that $200 million in fiscal 10 and then phasing it into 11, we have to use the FY10 pupil distribution for the purposes of spreading that $200 million. So then when you net them out, because some districts have growing pupils, some districts have declining pupils, the distribution still remains relatively even, but it's not exactly even. And that was a question that we dealt with in division. So that's the data run. I know this committee doesn't have direct jurisdiction over the property taxes, and that is B. And if there are questions, I'll go into, I can quickly go into the detail, but I think what's relevant to C is to skip quickly to line 189, the total certified levies for K-12 property taxes in taxes payable 2010, that's fiscal 11, are down $6.7 million. They increased by $201.9 million in taxes payable 2011, that's fiscal 12, and in fiscal 13, they increased by $348 million. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes the data that we had prepared.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I got a question to ask you. As you well know, I don't serve on any of the education committees, but if the governor is saying we need more money and the House is saying we need more money, why are we as the Senate coming forward with cuts to education when everybody else is saying it's the highest priority, you know, besides, I suppose, fire and safety. And so we're leading the way to cuts, and I guess what I'm just trying to get a feel here for why we or why our education committee in the Senate is the one that's leading the drive for cuts.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Day, I think that's a very good question, one that is kind of at the core of my opening remark about the way to, I think, envision, I bet, every single appropriation bill that the Finance Committee will see this year is how do we balance that 6.4, or if you take in account the federal money, the $4.9 billion deficit. And the governor, in his budget, approached it with a series of mechanisms, some cuts, some shifts, some borrowing, some property tax changes, but that was his approach. The other body is looking at that whole issue right now, and it looks like they're going to come out with, at least from my information, some shifts, or to a fairly large extent, shifts. What the Senate has, or at least the majority caucus has chosen to do, is to try to figure out how we can put together a budget that would address the problem, which is real. I mean, it's not something that we can kind of push off and say it, you know, we'll ignore it and things will improve. There's a lot of concern, and I think in this committee we heard from a number of individuals, Mr. Stinson and others, that said that things could get worse before they get better. So I think the approach the Senate has chosen was one of biting the bullet now, try to do some difficult things. We, in balancing the budget, it would be next to impossible to say you take 40% of your resources away and then balance the budget on the other 60%. So we all are sharing in it. We're trying to mitigate those reductions as much as possible, but we're all sharing in it. We did not use the shift, which would have created a greater problem for education, because if you shift and cut, you're basically taking, the districts are going to use their reserves, spend their reserves down during this difficult time, and then they'd have to go and borrow money, which would cost them even more. So I guess it's an approach. It's an approach. It's whether this will be how we end up at the end of session, that's going to be, I suppose, the negotiations between the governor and the House and the Senate. But I do think that it's fiscally responsible, not easy, but fiscally responsible, because if you look in 2003, we used 3? I think it was $1.2 billion in shifts. And we ended up spending all of the resources, extra resources, basically, for 6 years to try to buy back those shifts. And so it handicaps the legislative ability to do much of anything if they want to create some new initiatives or want to do something. So it's our attempt to try to balance the budget. The components that went into this piece of legislation were cuts and the mitigation of those cuts, reforms to try to instill maybe a different way of looking at how we fund education, how we deal with our districts out there. And that's an ongoing process. I think the discussion last night in committee was that we need to look at this on a continuing basis, releasing mandates so that districts have more flexibility. The reform part of it, there's a section in here relating to special education, conforming the state closely to the federal government, which saves the district some money. There's a charter school reform, which will, I think, over a period of years, help firm up the relationship between the charter schools and the regular public schools. What we call the consolidated levy, that no state has really been able to totally sustain 100% of the education funding like the state of Minnesota adopted in 2003. And so the consolidated levy is an attempt to kind of stabilize that base funding for our education system. And those are some of the key components. So it's basically an approach, and one that I think is fiscally sound.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, first off, I know you're very pro-education, and I think you run a good committee. I don't know. It just kind of seems to me like if we got down to the bottom line and we have to cut something, then that would be good. But it just seems to start if we start with education. I don't know. But anyway, I thank you very much for your answer back.
Senator Stumpf, we have let me just interrupt. We have another technical amendment that would, if we could offer. Mr. Mosman?
Mr. Chair, and on page 28 of the bill, and Mr. Nauman caught that to effectuate the federal use of the federal stimulus money the way it's been described on line 28.9. It's all that money is being appropriated in fiscal 10. So the number on page 28.9 would be to delete the 259.843 and insert 519.617. And then to strike line 28.10, I think would be the best way to do it, and to keep line 28.11.
Okay, Senator Stumpf so moves. Everybody has that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay.
And actually then, Mr. Chair, on line 28.5, since we took out the other language of the creating the stabilization fund will be carried elsewhere, I think it just might be add some clarity to line 28.5 after account to insert in the federal fund.
And Senator Stumpf so moves. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, could you possibly explain C revised? Just as I was glancing through, I'm seeing some things that just aren't making as much sense as maybe they should, but it's early in the morning, so but maybe you could just explain again.
Sure.
The columns in particular, I mean, as Senator Higgins and I were glancing through, we see one of the schools is like it 4064.
Yep.
Is like at $2,300, and I'm just kind of wondering if I know that you kind of mentioned the discrepancies in that column third from the right, but wondering if maybe that one in particular, because there's some oddballs in there that I'm wondering what is reflected in that column.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, maybe I'll be happy to do 4064. Anything that starts with a 4,000 number is a charter school. So I think what you're going to see. Let me explain the 1840 first. The reason for that is if you just take a look at their pupil change, goes from 87 pupils down to 9 pupils, and we're making the division of the federal money based on their 2010 pupils, which again is a bit of an anomaly when you divide it back out by the pupils in the second year. I know maybe I've confused it. Maybe it would be helpful for me to actually go through the whole structure, and then we can see how that would affect that particular charter school.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman, I guess in that one, okay, that, but I'm wondering, there isn't any way we can make a provision, because that seems, in that one in particular, that it's very obvious, I mean, that there's an issue there. And so I'm wondering, like I said earlier, I think you explained it, but it wasn't a long explanation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I think what might help is to actually kind of go through each column a little bit slower than I did the first time, and then that number, which ends up being a bit of an anomaly once you divide it back out per pupil, may not seem quite as much of an anomaly once we go through it. So what happens is in the first column with the $554 million subtraction on the top of it, is that's the amount of dollars in general fund that are being subtracted from school districts. Then what the rest of what that columns of districts and charter schools underneath it display is based on the February forecast data, a allocation of that cut. And how those cuts were allocated was the percentage of We use the pupil count as a way of allocating that cut. So, for example, if you just look at Aiken, that's the first district on the list, mathematically what's being done is we take 1234 and divide it by the 82905, and we get some really small percentage because we're doing that for each district. And then we take that resulting percentage and multiply that times the 544 cut, and that acts as a proxy to provide a distribution of that 544 for every district and charter school in the state. So that's how the general fund reduction comes off. Then the next column, where the 319.6 gets added back in federal funds, we do the reverse. So we use that same percentage and multiply it times the 519, and we distribute the federal add back in that same way. You add the two together, and that ends up in the reduction of 224.7, or the net cut to each school district. Now, that's the easy part. It gets a touch more confusing when we move to fiscal 11. The general fund cut is distributed based essentially in the same way, but now what we're doing is moving to the fiscal 11 pupil counts. So we make that same allocation of pupils. I mean, we for using Aiken again, we take the 1226 pupils, or the ADMs for Aiken, and divide it by now the 824.472. The percentages end up being pretty close to where we were. And now the division is you take the 424.385 and multiply that times the resulting percentage, and you get a distribution. And when you divide it back out by those pupils, you see the 515 cut that's coming off per pupil for each district. Now, you'll remember that when we talked about how the federal funds are being allocated under the language of the bill, there's this $200 million that is effectively appropriated in fiscal 10 and then is phased into fiscal 11. That's the $200 million that you see. I probably should put ultimately numbers across the columns, but fiscal 11 era add the $200 million underneath that. That's appropriated in fiscal 10 and carried into fiscal 11. Because it's a fiscal 10 appropriated dollar amount, we need to divide that, allocate that money based on the fiscal 10 pupil counts. So instead of using the fiscal 11 pupil counts that we did for the general fund reduction in fiscal 11, we're using the 10 pupil distribution. So it's essentially the same distribution that we used at the very beginning, the easy part. Which results in some swings. You know, it's no longer, as we saw on the federal funds in the first grouping, 389 or some comparable number. It's not, it would be 243 because that's the average. Instead, what you're getting now is some swings. And when you add it back out, there's some minor swings between districts. And that has to do with the vagaries of whether you're a growing district or a declining district. And what you saw in that particular charter school, if you want to flip back to that, and I forget the number, 4064. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm belaboring this point, but it is a little bit confusing. So the charter school in fiscal 11 is losing 515 per pupil, or a reduction of $4,633. In fiscal 11 in general fund, their fiscal 2011 reduction ends up being a fair bit larger because we're using that pupil distribution from the prior year, and that has to do with the fact that we're using the 10 pupils for as a proxy for 11, and their cut ends up being 1840. It's big. That's an anomaly that deals that relates to how the pupil counts distribute.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, you don't have a parent around that, so it looked like it's a
I'm sorry. That would be an ad. Yeah. Huh? I'm describing it the wrong way, Senator Olson. Yeah. That's a good point. Now I lost my page.
Page 12 of 15, top line.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a fair point. I'm thinking about it in reverse. They actually end up adding dollars.
Because they're only going to have nine kids in school.
Right.
So Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Another way to explain it, if you would look at the previous run that we had under, before we got the new guidelines, the distribution of the reduction was relatively the same. It was 273 in 2010 and 272 in 2011. But then when the new guidelines came and we had to reduce the reductions in 2010 first before we could spend any of the fiscal stabilization money in 2011, that's when the mechanism had to be totally overhauled and we had to make adjustments. So that same school now is reflecting approximately the same reduction, but it shows up as a anomaly or a larger reflection, as Mr. Nauman pointed out. Yeah. So.
Maybe Sarah Fishback, if you could hold on for just a second, maybe we could have Mr. Mossman just explain what changed a little bit and what's led us to this, and then get back to questions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbrack, briefly, on what happened was prior to the federal stabilization money that we're getting that's being shared, the education pot that's being shared with higher education and K-12 education, we had been allocating that, looking at all 3 years together, the 2009, 10, and 11 shortfalls, because there was the federal law was not clear that we needed to look at it sequentially. Long story short, what changed when the guidance came out just Wednesday morning was that the guidance directed that we look at those changes sequentially, so that we look at cuts in 2009, then in 10, then in 11, and that's what changed what we had to do here.
Okay, Senator Fischbach.
So, Mr. Chair, and I guess I'll just throw it out there since then. The feds are saying that our cuts have to be based this way? Is that, or that they have to be based on these older numbers, I guess, is with a lack of a better term?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, no, the feds aren't speaking directly to that point, but we have done some work with the Department of Education. Ideally, what we would have preferred to do is have a higher cut in fiscal 10 and then a lower cut in fiscal 11, and we do that, but it's not at the right levels, because it would have, if we had cut to those levels, we would have pierced the maintenance of effort, and we no longer would have been eligible for the federal funds at all. And the way that that works is you can't make a reduction in any particular year in 10-11 that is lower than the entitlement for fiscal year 2006. So that's sort of as a threshold beyond which you can't cut, and we have to think about them in individual years, which is more akin to how the federal government does its budgeting. It thinks about things in an annual budget cycle as opposed to a biennial cycle. So if we had done it that way, we would have actually done a reduction on the general fund to set at about $744 million and then added the federal money back, and it would have been a nice, even distribution. The trouble is that we would have had that maintenance of effort issue. So then we move to a second level of analysis, which allows us to direct the governor to phase that money. But in consultation with the Department of Education, we felt it was most appropriate to use the fiscal 10 pupil count to correlate with the year in which those dollars were appropriated. And that $200 million, while being phased into fiscal 11, is truly being appropriated in fiscal 10, and that's the amendment that we just did so far.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a final comment. It just doesn't seem right that we cut based on one number and add based on another number. I would think that there would be a more even way to do it. Now, maybe that I'm missing something with the Fed's requirements, but it doesn't seem fair that we reduce and then added a different. And then when we do are able to give them a few dollars back, we do it at a different, based on different numbers. So, because there is not a huge range, but there are some significant ranges, I think, when you're talking about adding dollars back in that between the school districts. So, just a final comment on that. But thank you for the explanations.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, one of the issues I have is that we have the per pupil funding formula, and And that is what we're cutting, and we're not cutting the actual funding that school districts are getting when you add on all of the extras, the compensatory, the sparsity, the integration aid, the all of the extra things that we have, even QComp that districts receive, that makes their amount when you divide it per pupil much higher than some other districts. So one district may get $8,500 in state funding and per pupil, and the other one might get $5,400. But when we're cutting only the per pupil formula, the percent of cut is much greater for the one who's only getting $5,400 than the one that's getting $8,500. And this is actually happening. So the percent of cut for some of these districts is much greater than for others. And I see that as a basic unfairness. And we already have a pretty unfair system the way it is. But this makes it worse, I think. And so, you know, there was a discussion and an amendment offered yesterday that would have done the cuts on a percent basis more than on the per pupil formula, the base formula. Discussion on it. It didn't look like it was going well, and the amendment was withdrawn. But it would be the fairer way to do this.
Just, Mr. Chairman, just a comment. The reductions are the same as the add back. So the reverse would be true when you add back. I mean, if you just look at the end reduction, that would be, I mean, we're operating the same way as we add back. So this is the approach that we used last year when we added the $51 per pupil. And it allows us some greater flexibility this year when we actually are trying to deal with a budget under a substantial amount of guidelines that seem to be fluctuating and have fluctuated almost on a daily basis at times. It was easier to do the subtraction as we put together these runs rather than get into the exact formulas and try to make the adjustments.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Olson.
Mr. Chairman, your statement to Senator Stumpf is accurate, and I think if Senator Fischbach was hearing that, the adding back is not at a different rate than the taking away. What is a little harder to comprehend is the way that is calculated, why that comes in 2011 at a different per pupil, because this is the subtraction of both the three the frog got loose in here again. The 3% reduction is done on a per pupil rather than a weighted or any other thing. It's a per pupil. The average daily membership, and you're adding back in the federal funds on that same basis, but how that twists around and turns to a different dollar rate with different districts is what I don't quite understand. Maybe you can try again,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson. I apologize, I missed the preamble part of your question, but if I start going in the wrong direction, maybe you can realign me a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to reconcile, you know, Senator Fischbach's understanding of the way in which the money was reduced and then it was added in, and she was saying that was on a different basis. And as Senator Stumpf has said, it was on the same basis.
Well, I think
on that per pupil.
I think what Senator Stumpf was making reference to is that when we had the $51 in one-time money that came out of the House of Representatives last year, that was ultimately part of the finance package. It was not entirely the same, but it is analogous. The $51 was added as sort of a standalone addition that wasn't codified as part of the formula allowance. Mm-hmm. As a result of doing that, it did not generate additional money onto compensatory sparsity and transportation sparsity, and it further did not provide any relief on the referendum cap. All three of those formulas are tied to the formula, so that when you adjust the formula, it It relieves the cap, and it adds more sparsity, and adds more compensatory. So I think what his point was is that it was an even dollar amount per pupil, relatively. We did use pupil units, which, of course, has weights by grade. So that ties.
Oh, you did use that?
We did for the $51. Okay. So it's not entirely analogous, but the point is that if you divide it out by the same pupil base, you end up with a flat $51. And what he was trying to say is that the state dollars being reduced are coming out at a flat per pupil figure. It's a different pupil base.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, the fact that it doesn't change those other compensatory when you start the calculation for 2011 is why you end up with a differential over in the right column in the second year?
Actually, no, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson. As I mentioned maybe I have not been as clear in explaining this, the federal dollars that are added back in fiscal 11 are divided by the fiscal 10 pupil counts. What you end up getting is this distribution issue because you use the fiscal 10 pupils, and then when you divide it out by the fiscal 11 pupils to get a per pupil amount, if you're a growing district or a declining district, it shows slightly different.
Thank you.
You'll note that the average on the federal funds coming back is 243, and you have districts that sort of bounce around that number with a few anomalies.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Higgins.
An odd question. Do we have any requirements that a school be a certain size? I see one school has 3 students going to 2 students. Another has 6 going to 5. Isn't there kind of a point at which there has to be a critical mass somehow for a school, isn't there? And I think 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 might not be it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, what are the numbers?
Both charter schools. Let's see. 4101. School for the Deaf. Let's see.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wieger.
I did confer with Dr. Melcher. I believe there's no minimum size.
No, there isn't.
There's what?
4,005 is the other one. Yeah, there's no minimum size. Is that what you said,
Mr. Nauman, is that your
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. There is no minimum size.
Okay.
Sir Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I want to ask a question. I guess Mr. Nauman's in charge, so I'll ask him.
Mr. Chairman, for members' information, I know that Senator Stumpf is awaiting a grandchild, so.
Yes.
The fact that he's not coming back quickly may be an indication.
Maybe good news. Yeah. We've been hearing that frog croaking a lot.
2 days now.
He tries to find out if a grandbaby's arrived. So I totally understand. So I'm sure you can help me. I see the author's amendment, and I think that was adopted before I got here because I am in 2 committees at the same time like many of us. So I was in a different committee. I wanted to ask why the subdivision 2A on page 160 was deleted, and
yes,
I missed the explanation.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, yes, I will discuss that. Senator Clark this is part of the early childhood education allowances. She included that subdivision in an amendment the other night, and it was an attempt to deal with the application process that certain school districts and other participants in the education allowances are dealing with so that they don't have to do as many applications. I know that Senator Clark is viewing some of those provisions as a bit of a work in progress, and she's attempting to do some conversations with the Department of Revenue to ultimately minimize the need for applications. I think there was a feeling on her part with during her drive home, she called me last night and said, I think that we ought to take that out. And her primary thinking was the way that language is drafted, it sort of reduces some of the market-based initiatives that are part of it. The reason being that if a program can take the kids and the parents that show up at their door and say, you are automatically qualified, then that might sop up all the available dollars and reduce some of the parent choice. That doesn't mean that she's not cognizant about wanting to deal with that issue. I think what she was thinking is that she'd like to deal with the Department of Revenue solution and that solution at the same time. I'm sure if she were here, she'd speak in great detail about how she envisions that to ultimately work. But she asked Senator Stumpf to have that provision removed for the time being until she had a more cohesive solution.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
And Mr. Nauman, I've heard some concern about this from my city, and I don't know if there's others that are participating in the allowance program that, you know, this process, it's been administratively rather complex, and this process has really helped to reduce the level of administrative complications. And so I think it seems to me there needs to be a discussion about this. And I assume there is a discussion going on. I don't know if anybody wants to speak to it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, when she made the decision to ask Senator Stumpf to include this in an amendment to pull it out, she was very clear in understanding that this was an attempt to deal with that issue. She realizes it's there and wants to continue to work on it. But I think that she felt that she didn't have everyone at the table at the time that language was being completely worked out, so that there might have been some unforeseen consequences as a result of that language, and she'd like to continue to work on it.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if we could have a brief comment on this, as this is a new policy change that was put in today in this committee.
Certainly is there.
Ms. Sandvig, I think, Ms. wants Sandvig? To say something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm here on behalf of St. Paul Public Schools. And anyway, we would just like to echo, and we have been working with Senator Clark. We were kind of surprised to have the language taken out today on this, in that looking at with the allowances, St. Paul has been one of the pilot projects. And I think working with all the different partners, with Child Care, Head Start, and St. Paul Schools, we've looked at learning from pilot projects that there have been some administrative burdens. And if we're looking to expand this statewide, we think we should learn from some of those issues and try to make it more administratively easier for parents and for providers as far as getting allowances approved. So I know Senator Clark has talked about with the Department of Revenue in doing that, but I would just say that we will continue, but it is an important part, I think, as far as the learning experience from the pilots and if we're taking this statewide to make it smoother for people that we're not spending a lot of time on administrative.
Senator Anderson, let me indicate, because I don't think you were in the room, and I obviously was. The amendment presented was presented more as not a technical amendment, but an amendment that was not quite as substantive. It was coupled with there were two parts of it. There was that section, and then there was a section that deleted the section relative to the fiscal stabilization fund, because we had done that with my deficiency bill yesterday. So I wasn't aware that this would have other ramifications. Obviously, you serve on the division are more conversant with it than I am, but obviously it's now been amended out of the bill but can always be amended back into the bill if the committee so chose.
And, Mr. Chair, yes, you're correct. And as I said, I was in a different committee, so this is a more of a substantive amendment and changes potentially eligibility for the program or access to eligibility. And so I think Senator Clark may be right that it needs to, and I think everyone is talking about how to perhaps modify this, and that's a good thing, but I'm not sure if it makes sense to do this without a little more discussion.
Mr. Nauman, did you?
Well, maybe Senator.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I'm loath to speak to go too far with this, but I think that
you're loath to speak.
Well,
I haven't heard that.
I don't want to speak for Senator Clark, but I think it's fair to say that her opinion was that when this was language that was not as part of the pilot program last year, it was part of an initial draft of the pilot program for last year and was added back. It was rejected at some point in the process when the allowances were originally created. And then I think her feeling was that when it got brought back into the discussion, that it may not have been fully integrated with how to make the Department of Revenue solution work that she's talked about. And so I think what her intention is to, and when it was amended into the bill, it wasn't fully discussed at the division level, and that I think she'd like to try to work with the Department of Revenue, the St. Paul School District, and others that are involved in the allowances to try to have an effort that that works for everyone.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in defense of Senator Clark, I think the fact that she has just chosen this to take it off for now doesn't mean that it's not going to come back in another form without the thorough vetting and with the people that are affected by it. I mean, she's been paying very close attention and wanting to get this working right. So I don't see what it's just, you know, maybe you'd like to have it sit there until it was amended, but she chose to, I mean, she's kind of the author of it, and I would respect that, and I would respect the fact that she is going to try to get it resolved. It is not her intention to try to make things difficult, but to reconcile the differing issues that Mr. Nauman has raised.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, absolutely I agree with you. Senator Clark has been trying to work on this issue with all stakeholders and has been doing a great job of it, and I have full confidence that she can work this out. But I, at the same time, I don't feel comfortable just doing a substantive policy change here based on a late-night phone call rather than having it be discussed with the folks that are involved in it. And it does potentially affect eligibility of children in my city and other cities. And so I would feel more comfortable removing this this amendment today and allow Senator Clark to work on it in the future. And I, as I said, I have no doubt that she'll be able to work it out with all the stakeholders. I just don't think it's appropriate for this committee to take this action today.
Senator Anderson, just procedurally, you know, we're in committee not on the floor, but we try to follow the rule of if somebody voted on the prevailing side, you weren't here. If somebody who voted on the prevailing side wants to move to reconsider the amendment, we could certainly do that if there's someone who would want to move for you.
Mr. Chair, could we seek advice from Senator
Stumpf? Sure, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, my understanding is that the language doesn't work in terms of how it relates to the departments. And that it's her intent to make language so that the departments can actually implement and function or have the program function. So I don't think it's her intent to, you know, not have language in there. It's just that this particular language doesn't do what she wants it to do.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Do you want to get into a full-fledged debate on this? I mean, we should bring the department up, perhaps, and have testimony. If you want to get into the policy questions, I think then we should at least allow people to testify and debate it. But I'm not sure that that's really appropriate for this committee to do. So I would move to can I just move to insert this section back in rather than reconsidering it? I'll just
you could do that.
I think that – and Senator Stumpf, we can work it out and – I have no doubt Senator Clark and all the parties involved in the department and St. Paul and everyone else can find a solution. I just would feel more comfortable not doing that in the Finance Committee without everyone here.
Senator Anderson moves to reinsert the stricken language on page 160, subdivision 2A. Is there further discussion on Senator Anderson's amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further questions?
Well, Mr.
Further amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, maybe on page 23, section 41, you can tell me what that the alternative teacher compensation is in section 41. Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, is a provision relating to the St. Cloud School District that addresses a, and how can I frame it to be as accurate as possible, an issue of whether the St. Cloud School District is complying with the contractual agreement that was made relating to the to their alternative compensation, the QCOM. The information I have is that they had received a termination, and then of the QCOM funding in the middle of the year. Now, I think that has some very, very various understandings, but it created a kind of a difficult funding situation where you, right in the middle of the year, the funding stream changes. And so there's language also on what we tried to do was to address that the department should not, the department's supposed to monitor these agreements relating to alternative compensation. It would be best if those, that monitoring and adjustments, if there has to be adjustments, would occur either at the end of a school year or certainly before the next school year so that the district knows what revenues they have to work with. Mm-hmm. And visiting with the department, I understand that there's a number of issues at play. Mm-hmm. And this probably will get discussed at length, I think, in terms of being, you know, making things work out. I'm not sure that we have the exact language the way we mm-hmm. want, but that's what it relates to.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, you, why are they terminating the plan, the program, the department?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have all the details. This was I haven't read through the agreement. I visited with the commissioner and the department. I think there's two sides, or maybe more, to this issue, and it's my intent that we try to get a good understanding of what's going on and. Mm-hmm. So that we can address it and hopefully give some guidance to the department and to the school district.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, Number Senator three. Stump, my understanding is they've been in the program for 4 years and they're still having issues. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and members, the department indicated when we were visiting that they have been in the program for a period of years. One of the problems I think that we need to try to address is when that agreement is put in place, it should be a consensus on both parties or all the parties mm-hmm. that this is what they have to do. And mm-hmm. and I think what happened is they had approval before all the pieces were actually agreed upon, and then it kind of set. I'm probably venturing out farther on the limb than I probably can with all the information I have. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, one additional piece that I will add is that on or about February 12th, the department issued a letter to the the St. Cloud School District and told them that their participation in St. Cloud in the QCOMP program would be ceased, and that there would be based on a whole series of criteria. It's a fairly lengthy letter. And I know the department and the district had been in doing some back and forth with plan revisions, and I think the department decided that the negotiations had ended and that the district was no longer in compliance. As part of that letter, the district was told to begin making arrangements to have the funding repaid for fiscal year 2009. And I think there was some discussion about whether that made sense to essentially pull the plug in the middle of the school year. And so this language is an attempt to keep them in the program and allow to continue negotiations on that. I think the department would be very quick to tell you that they're not excited about this provision.
Sir Murphy.
Mr. Chair, just to add a comment on that, there is no intent to not have the agreements carried out. We want the department to carry out the agreements that are made and enforce the agreements. And in listening and trying to follow some of the guidelines from the legislative auditor's report, there's been a lot of discussion over the years relating to what we call QCOMP or alternative compensation. And one of the basic problems that I have voiced for a number of years is that QCOMP or alternative compensation has not been a evenly accessible program for all districts. And when you look at which districts are participants and which ones aren't, the bulk of the 43 districts that are in are all metropolitan districts, and with the exception of just a handful. And so what our attempt is in this bill is to try to address those issues so that primarily districts outside of the metropolitan area can participate in this. The commissioner is in full support. We're trying to we have different a number of ideas on how we can do that, because quality or alternative compensation means revenue.
Be more clear.
It's it's dollars that the district, some districts have and others don't. And it's also a program to enhance the quality of our teachers and consequently the quality of our education system. So we want the department and hopefully we'll be able to work through this.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
On that point, Senator Stump, it seems like with the language there on lines 12, 13, and 14, that as long as there's progress, which is a vague term, that they can continue to get their QCOMP money, even though they may not be in compliance. And it looks like that's probably something that goes on forever. I mean, sooner or later, you either got to pull the plug on them or they got to be compliant.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, on lines 9 and 10, you'll see that it's just for the 2009 and 2010 fiscal year.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump, so what happens is, excuse me, that the money that the department once paid back is not going to be paid back, but still with this amendment in your bill, they won't be able to go forward? Is that after 2010?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I think technically the way I would think about this is that the February forecast includes the St. Cloud School District continuing the alternative compensation program as if it, without change. The February 12th letter pulled them out, but, of course, the forecasted amount for that school district was still in the base. What this language does is buy the district a little bit of time so that they're not cut off in the middle of the school year.
But Mr. Chairman?
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think I'd like to move on 2310 to strike and 2010. You know, I don't want to cut them off in the middle of this school year. I realize what a hardship that would create. But I think this doesn't give them the incentive when we're guaranteeing them the money, no matter if they make any changes or not. They're being guaranteed the money next year, no matter what. And that makes me uncomfortable. I think that it says as long as they continue to make progress towards compliance, I think they need to be in compliance next year. And if they aren't in compliance, there is no guarantee that they're going to get the money.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I think that was the point that I was going to make. If it, cutting them off in the midst of this year would be very unfair, but this is carrying over into a new fiscal year for an entire fiscal year, so I would agree with Senator Roebling.
Okay, we have Senator Roebling's amendment. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Can you give us the lines, the page and lines again, so that we can make sure I've got the right.
Mr. Watson.
2310.
Mr. Chairman, it's page 23, line 10, delete end 2010.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Murphy and others have made a good point, and I think we would like to see this resolved, and I think it should be resolved in that time period. So, mm-hmm. I think that's sooner rather than later. I'd support the amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Roebling's motion in front of us. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Metzen.
I have the A34 amendment. This is...
Can we have it distributed for... Let's start the distribution. Okay, Sir Metzen.
Chairman, this amendment... South St. Paul and West St. Paul about a year ago created a South Metro Fire Department. So they have one fire department instead of two, and it's called the Southeast Metro. In the past, West St. Paul Fire Department was able to inspect their schools, and South St. Paul Fire Department wasn't able to do that, but they're all eminently qualified, and what this allows is it allows the fire department to also inspect the schools in South St. Paul. So I passed Senator Stumpf's committee unanimously a while back, and this is a small attempt for a little less government. And why do you need the state fire marshal looking at the schools when the districts are all trained and qualified to do the same thing? So that's what the amendment does.
Senator Metzen has moved the adoption of the A34 amendment. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senator Metzen gave a good explanation in committee, and I believe we had a discussion about making that
generic
statewide, wasn't it?
Yes, we did, but I think that's kind of a bigger step, and this came to me from our city council, our school board, the fire department, and I want to make sure that this one gets done, and if that makes sense going forward, other senators can do that, but I certainly want this one to pass. And it can be looked at. It can be looked at.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, maybe between now and the floor we can visit about that.
Okay.
There actually were some... local fire departments that were grandfathered in a number of years ago for that inspection. And so when that happened, other communities that had school districts were saying, well, why can't our fire departments do the inspection when the other district's fire department can do it? And so I think Senator Metzen brought a good proposal forward. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fischbach.
Oh. Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, does this have any fiscal implications, or is this a policy amendment we're doing in the Finance Committee?
Well,
Senator Betson?
it has been thoroughly discussed, and I, you know, and it has, you know what it does? It has a fiscal impact. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to save some money. You know, why have the state inspect the same qualifications as the local firefighters have? Yes, it has a fiscal impact. I don't know what it costs to have the state do it. It's, I don't know, it's $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, but somebody's going to save some money. And then
unfunded mandate.
Yes, it has a fiscal impact.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know that we did have a thorough discussion, and I thought the general feeling was that we were going to try to have it generic, and I thought we had made some move that direction. Now, it wasn't in there, and maybe there's a reason for that, Senator Stumpf, but perhaps that's what should be done. I think selecting out and doing this piecemeal is probably not the best.
Well, come in with, Mr. Chair, come in with your own bill. I mean, I'm trying to do my service for this area. So.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reflecting the discussion that we had, and I think it was laid on the table for possible inclusion, but I don't know if we had agreed. I thought there was some language change that was made.
Chairman, we'll look at this going forward, but if I happen to have a good idea and it can be expanded on, we'll look at it. But let's get this one done, and I promise to go forward and look at other ones. But
further discussion on the A34 amendment. Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the A34 amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
Okay.
Senator Stumpf or Mr. Melman? Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair, members, Ms. McCoy brought forward one additional technical amendment on line page 15, line 26. Just in terms of how the department would actually carry out the numbers that the department would actually use to carry out to clarify, the amendment would be on line 15, page 15, line 26, after year, insert a period and delete based on the most recent February, and then on line 27, delete forecast, period. And that would allow the department to make the distribution based on the numbers they actually have rather than going back on the self-reported data of the February forecast and using those numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Ferguson's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments? Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A39 amendment.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, since this is a finance committee, this is a finance amendment. Basically, what's going on is, we're cutting our money off of, the same pot of money that everybody gets. And, the districts that I represent and the districts that some of the other folks that are around the table here, we're taking a 4% haircut, and everybody else is taking 2. And with this amendment, if you throw the compensatory money in with the statewide aid and then make the cut, the haircut for everybody is a little more equitable. In greater Minnesota and other places where the school districts, some suburban neighborhoods where the school districts get a substantial amount less than other school districts in the state, it's completely disproportionate. If we have to take a 4% haircut in Kenyon-Wanamingo, that is a much larger percentage of their budget than a 2% haircut in, say, St. Paul. And if everybody had about a 3% haircut, it would be a little more equitable, and that's what this amendment attempts to do. Now, I'll have to ask Mr. Nauman, but evidently there was a couple word changes that needed to happen on this amendment. Is that?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I think based on the amendment that you just did with that Mr. Mossman recommended, you would want to redo that amendment to this amendment. So I think on line 1.11, you would want to strike based on the most recent February forecast so that the period would end with, so it would end with for that year.
Okay. I'll incorporate that in my amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would oppose this amendment. We did have a discussion last night on a little different variation of rearranging it, rearranging how the reductions are made. And the amendment last night was to back out the referendum dollars. This is not, I mean, the approach that we chose was one to use the pupil count. It allowed us the flexibility to make the reductions and make the add backs very I don't want to say easily, but to make them relatively even. And when we look at the actual reductions, we've tried to mitigate them as much as possible. When you bring in, and this is difficult, but I mean in terms of making reductions, but we have programs that relate to, that drive funding, that relate to poverty, that relate to disability, that relate to immigration, and language abilities. Many of these programs, the experts in the country and all over agree, these are difficult issues that school districts have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so often when you take the revenues that districts receive from all sources and put them together and say, okay, just because they have more revenues, it's unfair to another district. I can use my own Senate district, let's say Stephen Argyle. They have very few minorities. They have no, or very few. I'll use very few because I don't know, I might be wrong if I say none. LLE students. And so we have more of a monocultural group of students. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the graduation rates, they're like, you know, 98, 99%. You look at their college results, mm-hmm. and they do fabulous, and yet mm-hmm. they are not receiving the same dollar amount as, let's say, the classic that's used is always, you know, the two urban centers, St. Paul and Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And in committee, St. Paul school districts have 36 different languages, and maybe more. If
good for their mental,
I mean,
health.
I could be corrected there, but they have multiple kinds of issues that they're dealing with. The formula that we have is not perfect. I'd be the first one to admit it, and I think that it takes a lot of digging into it and a lot of participating to try to rearrange that formula. But I think it should be done in the Education Finance Committee and not in the full education or full finance committee.
Senator Day.
Well, first off, to Senator Stump, I like Senator Murphy's amendment. Somewhere, somebody in Minnesota has convinced people In my district, it's $5,140 per pupil, less than Minneapolis. And somebody, last year it went up $600 or $700 more. I talked about it on the Senate floor. That's $100,000 a classroom that every time I walk down the hallway in Owatonna, I can look in at $100,000 you receive less. Somebody's convinced them that we don't have homeless, we don't have poverty, we don't have single mothers. We have the fourth highest population of Somalis. We have all the problems. Granted, it's a smaller city, a smaller school district. But somehow we just keep going year after year after year. And then what happens is then when we do the reduction, then we all go back equal. And that just doesn't make any sense. That's why I'm for Senator Murphy's bill. And I didn't want to get into different school districts, but sometimes you have to because you can't make the comparison. And so over the years, something has been totally wrong that we have skewed the system per pupil way out of whack. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it shouldn't be more, because I know that it should be, but maybe it should be 3,000 or 3,200. In my area, it shouldn't be 5 to 5,500 on every single student that goes to my school. So I think there's an imbalance, and we keep somehow telling people that, and it just isn't right. I think most of these school districts, we have the same problems in smaller cities all across the state, and our schools are having a tough time staying alive. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm asking a question I don't know the answer to, but looking at this, have we done, has the department or anybody done any calculation of how the aid that's going to go directly, the Title I infusion that's going to go directly to school districts, how that compares, is that aligned at all with the compensatory in terms of if there were, the more compensatory you get, the more Title I aid, is there a correlation between those two? I mean, I've already had a reaction from a superintendent that says, you know, why should, you know, they're going to get an infusion along this line. Why would we, you know, it is essentially addressing the same issue based on that. And I don't know the motivation for picking this one particular thing out of it, but was that might be driving it. They're going to get an infusion of federal aid that a lot of the other districts aren't going to get. And maybe it isn't that big a deal to share use that as a basis for sharing the cuts that all the districts are going to have.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think that you would find that the federal formula for Title I, which is the poverty formula, would tend to oversample those, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but just more dollars to those districts that have a higher concentrations of poverty, or higher poverty numbers.
So Mr. Chairman, do we know the extent to which, if you were going to calculate the approach that this approach to the sharing of the pain, if you will, whether that would in fact in those districts be backfilled by the federal money?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I think it's important to clarify that what this amendment does is use basic revenue and compensatory in a similar mechanism to the way the current language of the bill uses the pupil counts.
Yeah.
As we talked through with Senator Fischbach, as a proxy for distributing the reductions. So it's not a reduction to compensatory per se.
Oh, I know.
It would have a higher cut in a compensatory district because the compensatory would act as a generating a larger percentage of dollars than a district that had low compensatory under this formula.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nama, what I'm asking is, if you were to overlay what they will get from federal money through Title I for these districts, where does that put them? Behind, ahead, keep them whole, or
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we heard testimony from Dr. Melcher that the department has done an analysis of the distribution of Title I dollars. We also had a separate distribution that we got from the Congressional Research Service that we handed out in committee. We haven't attempted to integrate those two pieces, nor have we attempted to overlay this distribution on top of it. I think what you could think about, and probably be fairly close, is that a formula like this is going to pull more dollars out on a per pupil basis out of those higher compensatory districts than those districts that don't get high amounts of compensatory. And the federal formula, the Title I formula, is going to generate more dollars into those districts. I've never done a correlation, although one could certainly be done without too much difficulty.
Okay. We've got Senator Roblin.
Thank you. Which is a good argument for supporting this amendment, because what this would do is treat them all with the same percentage of cut, basically, in their total state aid. But then if the federal government comes in and backfills with Title I money to the ones who have been getting the higher compensatory, which I'm sure there's a correlation because Title I and compensatory often go hand in hand, they will actually be harmed less yet. Mm-hmm. So then we're looking at the ones that aren't getting the Title I money, and they will have the much greater cut. And, you know, it's very frustrating to me. I know we have a large achievement gap. But the way to reduce that gap is not to bring down the top achievers. And I'm afraid that the cuts that those schools are going to get could result in exactly that. And, yes, our achievement gap might be reduced, but not the way we want it to be. We want those top achievers to stay at the top. And so, you know, I think that the way it's set up in the bill right now has got definite problems. And I think Senator Murphy's amendment addresses that issue, and especially when we can think about that money going directly to the districts that isn't going to be funneling through our formula here for Title I money.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? Senator Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just in closing, I Senator Stump, I don't like providing amendments to your K-12 bill at any time. But for me, the last couple of years have been the coup de grace. I mean, you know, we took all that money over the last couple of years and we put it on special education. And, you know, the districts I represent don't get a lot of that money. The disparity between some districts has grown under our watch, and I'm talking about the funding disparity. You know, I got a list here of, you know, the real money that everybody gets in all their school districts, and they're ranked, you know, number one, whoever gets the most, you know. And so I start looking through here to find my districts and Senator Day's districts, and guess what? You know, you got to turn to the back page. There's a couple. And the next page, a couple more. Next page, a couple, five, six more. You know, and then there's like, what is that? Six pages more of school districts that get more funding than some of the schools in greater Minnesota. And it's just, you know, Senator Roebling said it. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of good students out there. Our community of Goodhue has been graduating 100% of their students. Every year I've been in the legislature except for one. You know what? They've got one language there, English. They don't have any choices. And, you know, it's just a student is a student is a student. Now, I have always supported, you know, our larger school districts that have issues. And the reason why I don't go after some of those other funds, like free and reduced, and because those – I believe those are the funds that are trying to take care of some of our poorest school districts that are out there. But when it comes to a matter of fairness, I don't believe, given school districts who have, you know, not participated greatly in this special education money or in some of the other money that we've put into education over the past few years, you know, that was not on the basic formula, I think just, you know, those students, they need, those school districts need help, and those students are, you know, and I'm not saying anything bad about any other students in the state, but they're all the same, and we need to do a better job of trying to provide the same education for everyone. Now, the problems that some of the larger school districts have, you know, we see a little bit of that in Greater Minnesota. We all do. You know, and I don't like having to do this, but sooner or later, folks, we got to wake up. What's fair is fair. We're taking a 4% haircut, and because of the backfill of the money, the larger school districts are taking 2%. It's just not fair, and this is one way of making it a little closer to being fair. I can look around the table. I know it isn't going to pass, but I'm going to offer it up anyway.
Okay, we have the 839 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. I'm sorry. Sir?
I think it's division.
Okay, division requested. All those in favor of the amendment, if you could raise your hand. And opposed. Okay, the amendment fails 7-9. Further discussion on the bill?
Hey, Leroy.
If not, Senator Stump moves that Senate file 1328.